Hello, and welcome to episode number 62 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Over the course of the history of this podcast, we've covered events and experiences that are so bizarre, seemingly irrational, and even absurd that one can't help but come away from an exhaustive examination of this data, wondering how on earth it fits into our notion of reality at all. Put simply, I don't think it does, but not because the data is somehow in error. After all, at this point, there's simply too much of it with too much cross-cultural consistency for that to be the case, even allowing for a healthy dose of filtering for cases involving misrepresentation, misapprehension, and/or mental instability. No, it being the case that this is a bona fide phenomenon happening to real people in real ways, and has been since time immemorial, the problem must lie not in the data, but in our very conceptions of reality. In today's episode, we'll be unwrapping this enigma even further, but not in the form of a new case we'll be studying, but rather in the form of questions and answers. The questions submitted this time around for this inquiring mind feature were, again, of the highest caliber, and my thanks go out to all who took the time to submit a question. Since I don't have the time to answer all of the questions submitted in this podcast, I've chosen to engage with several that I think will help us keep our eye on this central question regarding the nature of reality. And with that in mind, let's get right to it. In this, the third installment of The Inquiring Mind, in this, the 62nd episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. All right, let's get right to it. Question number one is worded as follows. So I've been considering how old the universe is and the probability of other life having developed out there. I was wondering if you'd ever come across any calculations of statistical probability of other life having formed out there somewhere. Also, more interesting to me is, if life has evolved to be intelligent and visited us in one form or another, what is the probability it would be at a similar level of development as we are currently? I don't know the answers to these questions, and I'm not particularly mathematically minded, but it seems to me that it'd be most likely that life would be a lot more advanced than us. A lot could be millions or even billions of years. Meaning, the chances of another life form being at a very similar level to us in the same narrow window of a few hundred years almost seems absurd given the vastness of time that has passed since the universe began. Comparing technology even with a difference of only a few hundred years would be close to the point of being indistinguishable from magic. So what hope can we realistically have of understanding its origins or intent? Perhaps there could be a level that they get to where they move beyond the need for any presence in the material universe and exist outside of that. The statistical side is interesting to me as it's quantifiable, and the speculative side also interesting as it allows one to imagine what's possible. This is a great question and has many aspects to it, a lot to unravel. This could certainly be an entire podcast episode on its own. And I have addressed a few of these notions before, but it's good to sort of capture it in one answer here. First of all, many excellent points made there, and he's right, the chances are very low that if we were being visited by an intelligence that's not human, supposedly from somewhere else in our physical universe, the chances that the technology would just look sophisticated to us seems unlikely, because that would imply, as he suggests here, that they are only, you know, decades or a few hundred years ahead of us. Even a few hundred years, as he rightly points out, the technology would likely be at a point where we wouldn't even recognize it as technology. It would simply look like magic. All you have to do is think back to how much our technology has changed over the last century, and you realize these things happen very, very quickly. We went from a horse and buggy to rocket ships leaving our solar system within about 100 years. So imagine what would happen after a few hundred years, thousands of years, millions of years. And as he points out here, because of the age of the universe, some of these civilizations could even be billions of years beyond us. And to be quite frank, at that point, we can't even imagine, we can't even begin to conceive what that would look like in terms of technology. It's just so beyond the pale that we can't even go there. But again, the chances are very low that it would just look like sophisticated craft to us, which again raises some interesting implications. Is it possible that they are dumbing down their manifestations so as to look a certain way to us, to play into our cultural expectations? That's possible. Is it also possible that some of these craft that are being spotted are actually physical in nature, but they arise from some sort of intelligence that exists on the earth in some sort of shadow biome, a kind of other humanoid species that's existed here, perhaps in the oceans or whatnot, whose history, the length of their history, the length of their civilization might be closer to ours because of that, because they are also an earthly intelligence ultimately. Interesting implications to think about here. Now, in terms of the original question around the chances that life is formed in the expanse of the cosmos, at this point, most scientists believe this is pretty much a slam dunk. The numbers are just so astronomical, pun intended, that assuming that the chemical interactions across the universe are the same, assuming that evolution would roll out under the same conditions generally, although it would adapt differently depending on the specific environmental conditions of the planets in which it arose, etc., you would expect life to be prevalent throughout the cosmos in millions of planets easily. And this, of course, leads to the so-called Fermi paradox, which says, if life should be there, why haven't we found it? Why haven't we seen any sign of it? Why have we not picked up any evidence that these civilizations exist? Now, part of the problem there is that there are some assumptions made with the Fermi paradox, or behind the Fermi paradox, that have since been questioned by some groups. For instance, for a long time with our civilization, as we grew in our sophistication and our technology, our footprint became larger and larger. It would have become more and more obvious to other planetary civilizations or other civilizations even existing in spacecraft, perhaps permanently, that we existed because we were putting out so much energy into the cosmos. It became apparent that we were there. But of course, that also is tied to a certain level of development. And as time goes on, eventually that begins to change. And as sophistication moves into its next epoch, then actually the footprint can decrease. And in fact, there is some people who have even suggested that what we might have here is an example of so-called transcension. Now, the transcension hypothesis, which I actually addressed in one podcast episode, suggests that at some point, civilizations advance to the point where they can actually reduce their footprint. They move into a microenvironment. Because remember, space and size is relative. If you can make yourself microscopic, if you can shrink down your entire footprint, you reduce the amount of energy you have to produce to sustain yourselves, and yet you could exist in a space that is so tiny that it becomes largely undetectable for any civilization that's still living in the previous kind of iteration. Another possibility, and this is actually evidenced in the experiencer literature, that some civilizations may progress to the point where they transcend the need for physical presence altogether. That some of these light beings that have been encountered, while some of them suggest they've always been that way, others said at one point they had physical bodies and physical iterations, but eventually they learned to transcend the physical realm altogether. And of course, if that happens, then this would not be detectable for people looking with telescopes and sensor systems and whatnot on the physical plane. So that gives you some ideas in terms of where they might be, assuming again that life should be out there. But again, that initial question around what are the chances that they would have technology so similar to ours, if they really are coming from extraplanetary civilizations, extrasolar civilizations, potentially even extragalactic civilizations, yes, indeed, the chances are very low, and I think we should be suspicious of that. In fact, people like Jacques Vallée have made that very point, suggesting perhaps, therefore, the ET hypothesis is too simplistic, that something more complex, and in his words, interesting, is what's going on. All right, time for our next question, which is worded as follows. Hi, XO. Thank you for your research and conversations in regards to this topic. I had an experience in 2010 in New Zealand, which I now understand to have been a CE5 event. In a nutshell, I asked in my mind for proof of UFO existence and then pointed my camera in the sky. In the very first shot, I captured a photo of a structured craft with a pattern of lights and other anomalous details. It was not there in the sky before or after I clicked the button, but seems to have materialized just for this moment. I did not see or hear anything at the actual moment of taking the photo. My mind blew several times as I processed what had happened. Not only did I get personal verification of UFO/UAP reality, I also had to wrap my head around the fact that they had demonstrated capabilities of some sort of time manipulation and mind reading. Even after 12 years, I am often still shaken when I think about this and freely admit that it consumes a great part of my life/time. Which leads to my question. How does one move on from an experience like this? The inevitable questions of who, what, how, why seem unanswerable, yet burn fiercely. There is every extreme of theory/explanation available. What are experiencers supposed to do with their proof of God only knows what? Again, I thank you. Any thoughts would be appreciated. Again, another excellent question and a fascinating encounter that is reported here. And I want us to pay close attention to what he said here. Quote, I asked in my mind for proof of UFO existence and then pointed my camera in the sky. In the very first shot, I captured a photo of a structured craft with a pattern of lights and other anomalous details. It was not there in the sky before or after I clicked the button, but seems to have materialized just for this moment. I did not see or hear anything at the actual moment of taking the photo. Unquote. Now, this is really fascinating. Now, of late, I've been talking a lot about the nature of reality and how data arising from the UFO phenomenon and paranormality in general is suggesting that our current mainstream working model of reality is not only incomplete, but also woefully misguided. I think the details of cases like this demonstrate this point to the nth degree. It's one thing for someone to send an intent to commune with UFO intelligence at some appointed time in the future. It's another thing entirely for this to happen instantaneously. This suggests our intention impacts reality. I believe this is because ultimately the physical stuff that we think of as reality is really what's manifesting in a kind of shared dream space. And again, I think cases like this are a perfect example of why this is the case. Again, if he was communicating with some sort of spacecraft out in space and saying, hey, at a certain time at 9 p.m., will you meet me at this place and manifest in the sky? That's one thing. That could be something we would expect within our current space-time construct understanding of mainstream reality. But in this case, he asked instantaneously for something, pointed his camera, and managed to capture a photo. So it's not even that it just was projected into his consciousness, as again, some people have suggested might be happening here. No, in this case, instantaneously, he sends out an intention and then is able to capture in our supposed physical reality an actual photograph. Again, I think what this points to is that what we think of as the physical world is ultimately not really that. That's the appearance to us. That's how we experience it. But ultimately, it's a mindscape, a dream space that we share, and that some of these others can interact with that dreamscape, with that mind space, can interact with our mentation process directly. But the key is that reality follows the mentation, not the other way around. So again, notions like time and space, that's how things appear to us. That's how we experience them. But that's not their ultimate nature. I think the ultimate nature is more like a kind of shared dreamscape, as I've said. Again, you can think about a dream. When you're in a dream, it feels real. It feels like it's happening on a certain progression of time. The time scale has a consistency to it. Space feels real there. And yet we know none of that is actually physical in and of itself. It's actually a projection of mind stuff, ultimately. That's what happens when we dream. And what I'm suggesting here is that our everyday waking world is the same. We just don't realize it. And I think cases like this one point squarely in this direction. Now, in terms of how one moves on from an experience like this, I feel for you here. This is a conundrum that most experiencers go through. Many do anyway. It's the ontological shock we've talked about many times, because the implications are very often paradigm shattering. But I'm concurring with that here. I'm saying a new paradigm is in order. That's what this data is suggesting. I don't see any other way around it. In my case, this has been easier because I see this being supported by diverse but convergent lines of evidence arising in quantum mechanics, which showed 100 years ago that consciousness impacts reality directly, and fields like the neuroscience of consciousness. Lines of evidence in parapsychology have been pointing in this direction for over 100 years. So it's not like I'm postulating this hypothesis about reality being ultimately mental, mind stuff, to make sense just of the UFO phenomenon data. No, I'm saying diverse but convergent fields are all pointing in this direction. That's what makes the hypothesis so explanatorily powerful. All right, on to question number 3, which is worded as follows. As we move forward, how much of an aha moment do you think the collective minds will have in understanding we have built our reality based on outdated parental cultural information? That while it is comforting to have a sense of history and respect for what has come before us, the future is being able to see what we haven't seen before, literally. The current metaphor the universe is showing us is how people can be fed the projected reality from a very controlling mind, sociopath/psychopath, and they base their reality on what they are told, afraid to question it. From Russia to North Korea to authoritarian religions, we as a global society are just now learning to identify those in our groups who are manipulating the reality of others to protect their fragile egos and their desire for power over others. As a contactee, this is the purpose for being here. Lessons assigned and lessons learned. We are able to see things as they are rather than how we've been told they are, and understand the difference. In the end, the data point you allow in your mind becomes your reality, be it false or true. Yet another insightful and thought-provoking question. And this again speaks to what I was just referring to. Now, some will question this, arguing, if reality is really what we make it, why can't we fly on a whim or walk through walls like Jesus or aliens can? Well, first off, we live within overlapping shared mindscapes/dreamscapes, and when it is a shared inherited mindscape, it is being strengthened and maintained by a very ingrained feedback loop. It has a kind of inertia that makes fighting against its reality construct very difficult. However, it can happen. Clearly, we have examples of this, as I already pointed to, Jesus and aliens. Interestingly, the implication here is that as more people learn to see reality this way, the less this strengthens the energy feeding the feedback loop. And what does this eventually lead to? A dissolution of the boundaries of the construct. In other words, reality maintains its supposed objective strength, its solidity, only as long as we believe in it. When enough people begin to question it, then that inertia lessens and the construct itself begins to dissolve. Or not so much dissolve as evolve, and I would say that happens over time. Something else I'd like to say in regards to this comes down to a podcast episode I did on spiral dynamics. And in that episode, I talked about how different worldviews, different consciousness levels come online over time and the way that people see reality changes. And I would suggest also, along with what I'm saying here, that reality itself changes, that the construct is to some degree a mirror image of the conception. So again, as I pointed out in that podcast episode, what is self-evident truth will vary depending on your worldview, the very way you see the world, and also the way actually the world reflects itself back to you, the way reality is actually constructed around you. And along with that, we sometimes see something called the pre-trans fallacy. What this means is that if you've transcended to a new level, to someone at a lower level, it actually might look like you've regressed to a previous level. And that's because they can't see beyond the ceiling of their own consciousness level. So if you've transcended that, that literally doesn't exist for them. It's not part of their mental map. That's what this person was talking about here when this is new, literally new. And for someone who's not there, it won't even exist yet. And so they'll often misidentify it as a previous level, a previous construct. So they'll think someone's being magical in their thinking, as if they're regressing to kind of a Stone Age kind of thinking, when actually it's a transcension and an inclusion embodied in a higher level of reality. All right, time for our next question, which is worded as follows. Does the literature indicate a strong relationship between an experiencer's nature, positive / negative, or state of mind, peace versus turmoil, and the nature of their experience? If so, what are the implications of this information for our understanding of the phenomenon? Another great question. Yes, there is a correlation there. I've talked about this on numerous occasions. What we prime an experience with often does produce demonstrably different kinds of experiences with the UFO phenomenon. But very importantly, this is not only true of the UFO phenomenon. This is also true of out-of-body experiences and to some extent near-death experiences, and is certainly true of drug-induced experiences as well, like when people are under the influence of psilocybin or DMT. All of these are subtle reality states, and as such are impacted, changed, and to some degree written by way of the nature of the energy we bring to them, that we invest into them. Again, this revelation points squarely at reality. It's not that these experiences are less real. They are simply more malleable because they are not subject to the inertia of the consensus consciousness feedback loop. Again, what I'm saying here is that it's not that our normal waking reality is immune to this kind of influence by our energy. It's just that it is held together, strengthened, sustained by a collective consciousness that we all contribute to, and therefore any one person's individual influence is not going to be as strong. In these subtle reality states, this is the case, that the energy we bring really can prime the experience either for the negative or for the positive. And by the way, this also is true when it comes to something like lucid dreams. For instance, when you prepare to have a lucid dream, you'll be told that it's important to be aware of your energy, to go in with positivity. If you have a lot of negative energy or doubt or fear, it's often suggested that you try and work through that first, transmute that into a different kind of energy, more positive or at least neutral, before going into a subtle reality state like a lucid dream. Because again, the energy you bring ends up being written into the plot, so to speak, of what you experience. And yes, this is true also of the UFO phenomenon. Very interesting. And the implications go beyond what we've mentioned so far. There is very interesting data that's come out of research into reincarnation. There have been academic studies done in the United States where they basically gather information, data pertaining to cases where people have really strong memories of being reincarnated. And what they find when they are actually able to track back the previous lifetime, match it up with the new iteration, and see how long the gap was between lifetimes, what they have found, very interestingly, is that there is a difference depending on where you are in the world. For instance, in Asian cultures, the length of time in between lives is different than what you find in North American cultures. Now, when you think about this, it seems that the data is suggesting that the cultural underpinnings themselves seem to play a role, i.e. can impact, and to some degree author, the nature of the in-between life states, what entities are seen, etc., as well as how long the interval is in between incarnations. So again, yes, the energy we bring really does play a role in many different ways, not just in terms of the UFO phenomenon, not just in terms of out-of-body experiences, but also near-death experiences, lucid dreams. Even what we experience in between lives can be impacted by the energy we bring, both as individuals and as collective cultures that we belong to. Again, very, very interesting. And I hope you're seeing the overarching theme in this episode. In many of these different questions, the way I've responded is indicating again that reality is much more malleable than we have long assumed it to be, and that it is not primarily physical, that the supposed physical nature of reality is more like the appearance of it. Think of the physicality more like stage props in a stage production. meant to play a role, but not ultimately real, or at least not ultimately foundational. Mind or consciousness is what is primary. That is the substrate to the physical and energetic processes that arise on the stage, so to speak. But underlying it, it is a mentation process, a shared mentation process. And we both as individuals and as collective units can impact it, can even write its very plot, at least to some degree. All right, time for our next question, which goes as follows. Is there a frame of reference or historical context that could help us shed some light on the bizarre phenomenon of wolf-like creatures appearing to people who have come close to the phenomenon? How might this relate to the idea of a thin veil between dimensions? Another great question. Of course, it fits perfectly with what we've been talking about today, the overall theme. Now, what I would suggest is dimensions are different fields of mentation, some fed by and sustained by fewer inputs, and some fed and sustained by greater inputs. But what's ultimately dividing these different aspects of reality, these different dimensions, are mental processes, that this is all about mind. Now, the walls slash barriers slash boundaries between these fields of mentation, or dimensions, if you like, are porous. And some intelligences evidently know how to traverse these divides with ease. Now, interestingly, what seems to happen is that sometimes when one kind of intelligence passes through that porous barrier, it seems to put a foot in the door, so to speak, which allows a variety of intelligences, entities, different fields of mentation or intelligences belonging to those dimensions to come in as well. So that's why you sometimes find UFOs and then suddenly you find Sasquatch-like creatures or dinosaur-like creatures or 7-foot tall wolf-like creatures that stand on two legs often and have sometimes been spotted smoking cigarettes leaning against a light post. Sounds bizarre, but this has been reported by credible witnesses and was part of the study done by OSAP, funded by the United States government, as depicted in the book Skinwalkers at the Pentagon. Now, what I'm suggesting here is that regarding these different kinds of entities, they are all coming through a door that's been held open, so to speak, a porous boundary between these different fields of mentation, these different mind spaces, these different dreamscapes that we sometimes think of as dimensions. But again, I think dimensions is sometimes the wrong word if we mean it in terms of strong physicality, strong objective physicality being the root of reality. I don't think it is. I think, again, mind, consciousness is what ultimately authors what we experience. And in that sense, a dimension is more like a field of mentation or a mind space or a dreamscape. But in terms of these porous boundaries that emerge, in the same way that I said before that our collective mentality creates the energy vortex that strengthens and sustains this feedback loop that gives us our experience of reality. In the same way, when one entity has passed through these mentation spaces, or these dimensions, if you like, that actually strengthens that energetic signature so that it's more possible for other entities, other intelligences coming from different mentation spaces or dimensions to use that same corridor or that same porous boundary. That's what I think we're finding when we look at things like portals in a place like Skinwalker Ranch. I also want to make the point here, as I've said before on this podcast on numerous occasions, I think multiple players are involved in the UFO phenomenon. I think different actors are involved with different sources or origins. So again, extraterrestrials may very well be in the picture. I think they likely are. I'm just saying that when we talk about interdimensionals and them being in the picture, I think the notion there in terms of dimensions, that's attached to the idea of a parallel universe, which again is still a product of the same underlying physicalist paradigm. And so that's why I think actually that's a bit of a misnomer. I think a dimension in this sense is more like a field of mentation, that again, these different places of mind, mindscapes, dreamscapes, if you will. I also want to make the point again that when I say I believe, what I mean is I think this is where the evidence is clearly pointing, that this is not just my opinion. and not just in terms of the data arising from the UFO phenomenon and other forms of high strangeness, but this is the evidence arising from the foundations of physics and the neuroscience of consciousness. So again, diverse but converging fields of evidence are all pointing in this direction, where consciousness is primary, where mind stuff is what reality is ultimately composed of. Lastly, I think it's important to add that this is a lot to wrap our heads around. Again, we've been taught certain things and certain notions of reality have existed in our consensus reality and what's communicated to us through mainstream media and whatnot and mainstream academia for a very, very long time. And that's the case even though, as I've been pointing out for a while now, there is mounting evidence suggesting that that mainstream conception of reality is not correct. It's not just slightly in error, but actually misguided at its root, that ultimately the physicalist paradigm or reductionistic materialism, whatever you want to call it, is ultimately untenable. So what am I saying? Am I saying we are on the cusp of a revolution? Are we about to see a mainstream acceptance of these notions? Not likely, not in the short term. Although we are beginning to see a fraying of the previous confidence in the mainstream notion of reality, the physicalist paradigm. Ironically, many of the people who ardently, passionately defend physicalism don't actually fully understand it. And in that sense, they're more defending a tradition or a dogma than they are evidence that they actually feel is strongly in support of their notion. Now, to experiencers, I would point out that while the experience can be uncomfortable, can be ontologically disturbing, can be difficult to incorporate into your everyday life, just take heart that in many ways you are pioneers, forebearers of what will become a recognized understanding of reality eventually. This will happen, even though it will take some time. And again, those who really understand this have known this for a very long time. I'll leave you with the words of quantum physicist Niels Bohr, who in the early 20th century said of quantum physics and specifically the revelations around consciousness and reality, he said, quote, "If quantum mechanics hasn't profoundly shocked you, you haven't understood it yet," unquote. And of course, many of those early quantum physicists became mystics precisely because of the revelations arising from their field of scientific study, looking at the very root of reality itself. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian, and I do appreciate any support offered. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.